I'm going to tell you what's going to happen here over the next week. You may laugh, you may roll your eyes, but here's exactly what's going to happen, because they're going to win tomorrow.
The Leafs have won the game! Nice! Jumping it in!
They're going to win on Thursday.
Willie Nylander! We're going to Boston again, buddy!
It's going to be a Game 7 loss in overtime.
Comes right in front, they score!
And the game-winning goal will end the Maple Leaf season.
And they'll come out like, man, what an effort.
Love the fight of our team. You know, tough circumstances, being down like we were. The group pulled together to give us a chance.
We really took it to Boston. We were down 3-1.
I think we just stuck together, everyone buying in, doing what we need to do. Give ourselves opportunity to fight back and a great chance to win the series.
Look at us. Look how resilient we are.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow. Forget O's the mentalist. We have AK the mentalist on this show who called it exactly how it played out. You went head to head with O's the mentalist and you won. Wow.
I wish I was wrong. Obviously, the Leafs lose 2-1 Saturday night. This hour, first up, is brought to you by Leafs Busters. But here's the thing. I grew up in Toronto. I was a massive Leaf fan as a kid. Absolutely loved the early 2000s Leafs with Sundin and Darcy Tucker and Gary Roberts, yada, yada, yada. And I've been working in sports media for almost 12 years now. I've seen this story play out with the Toronto Maple Leafs before. It's all about maximum pain on the Maple Leaf fans, and it was only natural for it to play out the way that it did on Saturday night. They go out and win Game 5, they go out and win Game 6, and they played a great Game 7. I mean, they were right there with Boston. They took them to overtime on the road, but they lose on a weird set play for David Pastrnak, who gets in behind the defense and tucks it past Ilya Samsonov. And that's all she wrote. I'm not happy that I was right, but I knew I was going to be, because this is what the Maple Leafs do. They break the hearts of their fans, and they did it once again on Saturday night.
Crazy. Kudos to you, man. And you're so right with everything you said. It's almost like I would hate to hear Frank this morning on Wake Up Woodbridge, because now
we will.
He's going to go to his wedding this summer. He's got to be reminded of how much he hates the Boston Bruins because his beloved Maple Leafs let him and everybody else down again. And like we sent out a question on our First Up 1050 Twitter account this morning with a poll, and we said, you know, what needs to change with this team this season? Is it the management? Is it the players? Is it the coaches? Or is it run it back? And leading the way right now is coaches, which is surprising to me that people are leaning that the coach needs to be replaced right away. I have a hard time believing that success will change just because of a new coach behind the bench if you're still putting trust in the same group of players that have failed to get it done in the seventh consecutive season together. Seven seasons together, one playoff round.
Their last five elimination games, they scored one goal in each of those five.
Is it 0-5 in game sevens?
Oh, and they've lost six straight game sevens. They've had a lead in three of the last four game sevens in the third period. And they choked it away. They had that glorious lead, the pass from Matthews to Nylander. They're up 1-0. I can't even explain to you the pandemonium that was going on in my condo when Nylander scored. People are jumping and screaming and going insane, like pouring shots of tequila to celebrate the goal from Nylander. As these idiots are taking the shots, Hampus Lindholm scores the goal to tie it all up. It's just what happens to Leaf fans. And I don't know if it's a curse or I don't know if it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I think it's a curse, man.
Of a team that just doubles down and triples down on the same guys who year after year show they can't get it done. But it's time. Shanahan, tree living. It's time for some kind of change. Is it fair to Sheldon Keefe to identify him as the problem? Absolutely not. Is he complicit in this? Yes. He's the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's the guy behind the bench when they're not able to get it done in the biggest of moments. But they scored 12 goals in 7 games. They were 1 for 21 on the power play. They have Austin Matthews and William Nylander, Mitch Marner and Morgan Riley and John Tavares. They were 1 for 21 on the power play. You got if you're Keefe, you're like, you couldn't get me 3 goals on 21 chances.
AK.
And if you did, you're probably in the second round today.
Yeah. If people ask you, and I've been asked the question many times since Saturday, how did they lose again? All you got to tell them is 1 for 21 on the power play.
Exactly.
1 for 21. There's three things that can explain why the Maple Leafs lost again in Game 7 to the Boston Bruins. 1 for 21 on the power play. 13 of the last 14 playoff games, 2 or less goals, and couldn't get a big save when they needed it.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And they had two $11 million players, one in John Tavares, who had 2 points in 7 games, and another in Mitch Marner, who had 3 points in 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
And those are even more damning because William Nylander was not at 100% probably until game number 6 after dealing with those weird migraines that affected his vision. Austin Matthews was compromised, whether it was an illness or some kind of head problem that he had going on. You saw in Game 7, which was good for him to suit up. I'm not going to question any of these guys' toughness at all, nor should anybody, because clearly what was going on with Matthews and Nylander were serious issues enough to keep them out of the lineup. But the fact that Marner and Tavares were unable to step up with their boys, their guys they went to war with for years. They couldn't do it. They just couldn't step up in that opportunity. And I don't think it's fair to look at John Tavares and be like, oh, he should have stepped up and took the void of Austin Matthews. That's unfair to Tavares at this point in his career. But Mitch Marner is 26 years old. He's an elite, elite player. But he was not in that series. It's just a straight-up fact. And he has not been in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Again, I want to go back to a stat I mentioned earlier. In games 1-4 of playoff series, Mitch Marner is over a point a game player. He's been really good. But in games 5-7 of playoff series, he's played 21 of those and has 9 points in games 5-7 of those series. That says a lot to me. That says a lot about the type of player he is, the type of player he's capable of being. And I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, I know he's got a year left on his deal, and I know he's got a full no move, but I think the Toronto Maple Leafs need to seriously explore options without Mitch Marner going forward in a trade, one that can bring them back something they desperately need, a right-handed shot defenseman that can be the quarterback of your power play. And I'm not talking about John Klingberg. That was the idea to start the season. Of course, we know how that played out. I think it's just time. It's run its course with Marner, and I think it's better for both sides that they just part ways. And I'm quite certain that Mitch Marner will have a ton of success in his next destination, probably a lot more than the Toronto Maple Leafs will have. And that's just a sad indictment on this franchise here.
Look, in life and in sports, some relationships, you know, have its moments. They take its course. And maybe this is one of those relationships. I mean, ironically, it's the same night that Tom Brady has his roast on Netflix, and all of a sudden Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are best friends again. But that's the greatest example of a relationship that ran its course. And maybe this is the time for Mitch Marner and Leaf fans relationships to see them part ways. And I don't necessarily believe that might be the ultimate decision that happens here. I mean, there's that great saying, if you listen to the fans, you're going to be sitting with the fans. And how many times have the fans been screaming for change with this group and ultimately been left with no change at all, just change around
fans were
that
right.
group? And,
fans were and, right, though.
But again, the fans keep coming back. The fans keep coming back every year. They keep believing. Monday, we were here a week ago Monday, and everybody was full of anger. And you know, just the mood around this team and the emotion around this team was so toxic. They win 2 games and everybody on Saturday was saying, oh, they're going to do it. They lose the game and we're right back where we started again. I just,
I have a hard time believing that unless there's significant change in management with the people that oversee this group, we probably won't see any major change to this group. Because here's the thing, AK. Look at MLSE as a whole, okay? The Raptors suck. They're going to have a hard time generating any real profit. The Argos don't make any money for MLSE. TFC don't make any money for UFC. The Leafs are going to be the only team right now that is going to have to keep the boat afloat here.
Yep.
And if you start breaking and blowing things up, can you guarantee yourself to be a team that makes the playoffs, that gives yourself a chance in a playoff series? I don't know. Like, I don't make decisions based on emotions. I don't act on emotions like everybody else does. Do I want change in this group? Yes, 100%. I want change in this group because I'm so sick and tired of talking about the same thing with this group when we thought last year we were moving past it. But here we are again talking about the same thing. I'm so sick and tired of it, just like everybody else is. I just have a hard time believing that we'll see it. And so until it happens, you know, here we are, stuck again, talking
Sheldon
about
Keefe,
this team and its failures.
Sheldon Keefe and the Toronto Maple Leafs players will speak at 11:30 today. We will speak to Mike Johnson, our hockey analyst, on the other side. Dave Feshchuk of the Toronto Star, still to come, and Wake Up Woodbridge at 9. So if you want to have your voice heard on the Leafs and what should happen here in the offseason, give us a ring in about 45 minutes. MJ on the other side. A bad habit, sleep to late nights. Hour 3 of First Up continues. You're listening to TSN 1050, Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. We posted a poll earlier this morning with regards to the Toronto Maple Leafs and their future. And it's getting some really interesting reaction that I wasn't really anticipating. The poll question, what change would you like to see most with the Leafs? And the options were players, coaching, upper management, and run it back. I think the most surprising thing is that 7% of people voted for run it back. But both the players and the coaches got 38% of the vote, and upper management received 17% of the vote. Mm. And upper management would refer to, I suppose, Brendan Shanahan, because Brad Treliving was his first season as general manager of the Maple Leafs. It doesn't really seem fair to give him 1 year. But at the same time, if Shanahan is replaced, is it fair to the next president to be stuck with a GM he didn't select? So that's a problem, I suppose, that he'll have to deal with if that is what comes to fruition. But yeah, the players, the coaches, I think everyone is under the gun here. And should we welcome in Mike Johnson, guys? No? Okay. So we're going to try to connect with MJ in just a moment. The coach is the easiest thing to change by far, because there is no salary cap implications with regards to the firing of Sheldon Keefe and Guy Boucher. I mean, I don't think Guy Boucher will be back. I can tell you that. Guy Boucher is not coming back, people. You run a power play that goes 1-for-21 in the playoffs, you are done. Guy, you're the man. You have great suits, but I don't think you'll be back with the Toronto Maple Leafs. That is a certainty. But year after year, they just sift through the same situation with so it's Keefe is the head coach, and then he has different assistants every single year. Different guys running the power play. It's Carberry, it's Keefe, it's Paul McLean, it's this, it's that. I don't see a world in which Keefe returns, and I don't think it's an indictment on him. I think he's a fine coach. I think, is he the best coach in the NHL? He's not, but he's far from the worst. I think the criticism he receives is generally unfair, because his team that scored 3.63 goals per game in the regular season scored 12 goals in 7 games in the postseason. He's not out there playing.
No.
And I know he's the coach and he has to take some of the blame, but I think he's going to be gone, and I think they're going to trade Mitch Marner. Those are my two big predictions.
That's the popular opinion with everybody, right? Everybody wants a Mitch Marner trade. Everybody wants a new coach. I'm not saying that both of those shouldn't happen or can't happen. I guess we're going to have to see, you know, the decisions that are made within the coming days. I find it hard to believe that any significant change will happen with Brendan Shanahan still in charge. And look, there's a lot to, to believe why Brandon Shanahan could still be in charge, and there's a lot to speculate as to why he shouldn't be in charge. And look, we're not the ones that make those decisions. Again, I don't sit here and advocate for, you know, people's firings and stuff like that, but at the same time, what we do advocate is for different results. And
amen.
Right now, the results are the exact same. And at any time you have results that are similar, you have to sit there and start speculating on whether or not change is necessary. And I think we finally hit a tipping point with this group where
it's been 10 years of the Shanahan plan. This is a long time, but again,
I've always said, and I've always still believed, like, come playoff time, it's not who you lose to, it's how you lose. And you look at this series, I know they lost Game 7, I know it was in overtime, and everybody that looks at that Game 7, even look at the statistics in that Game 7, every stat in that Game 7 is almost identical. Hits, you know, shots, penalties, everything is identical. It was a game separated by the thinnest of margins. But when I say how they lost, you can't fall into the trap that because they battled in Game 5 and because they battled in Game 6 and because they lost, you know, by the thinnest of margins in Game 7, that everything's okay. They lost two home games in this series that added up to 6 home games in a row come playoff time. And you look at the way they played in Game 4 in a game that they must win, and they laid an egg. So when you look at how they lost to a Boston Bruins team that wasn't even as good as the previous Boston Bruins team they've lost to in the past. So you can't get caught up into the feeling sorry about this group because they lost in overtime. They beat themselves again. Can we play that clip from Sheldon Keefe post-game where he said that teams, when they play the Maple Leafs, prepare for the Maple Leafs to beat the Celtics? Let's hear this clip.
Well, they're a very structured team. You know, they do a very good job through the neutral zone, and they protect their net as well or better than most any team in the NHL. And they were content to do that. You know, they were content to do that. It's very evident. Teams play the Leafs. They set up the game for the Leafs to beat themselves. And I thought we did that in Game 3 and 4. We beat ourselves with how we played it at home.
Simple as that. You can even go back to Game 1, how they beat themselves. They gave up 3 power play goals in that game. Very undisciplined in that game. Now, the score didn't reflect that game because I thought for the most part it was a contested game by the Maple Leafs. But the mistakes that they made, the penalties that they took, self-inflicted mistakes. And people were criticizing Sheldon Keefe for saying that. But he's absolutely right. He is absolutely right. Teams know how fragile this team is come playoff time.
They know the history. They know they wilt in big moments, in critical games, elimination games. And with regards to Keefe, and a lot of people say, oh, he doesn't make adjustments. He doesn't, doesn't maneuver well on the fly. I disagree. In this series, I think Sheldon Keefe was the better coach.
Yes.
Between the two. I think Jim Montgomery, again, this is a guy who started the series with Pat Maroon and Kevin Shattenkirk on his first power play unit. That's all that needs to be said with regards to that. He's the guy who pulled Jeremy Swayman from the goal in game number 2. So Sheldon Keefe, I thought in the last 3 games of the series, the way the Maple Leafs changed their stylistic approach, they became the Boston Bruins. They did adapt, and it almost worked. And more so than anything, and the fact that the Maple Leafs had to adapt, had to change the way they played because their best players were either injured or invisible.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Sheldon Keefe's fault. Now, I still think Sheldon Keefe will be out of a job, and I think Sheldon Keefe in his next role, wherever it may be, will likely thrive. I think he's a good coach. I do. But you get nothing from your players, when your power play goes 1-for-21, you score 12 goals in 7 games, you just got to throw your hands up. And I guarantee you behind the scenes, Keefe is saying exactly what I'm saying, and he's right. But in the NHL and in professional sports, There's a fall guy, and the easiest fall guy is Sheldon Keefe.
He's the coach.
He's not absolved of what has happened here. He is behind the bench. He is in charge. He is part of the power play. He decides who goes out there. But the guys who go out there, who went out there.
Did it matter who he put out there?
No, it didn't matter if you were
on
the power play.
You could have put all five different guys out there.
It's a total joke.
We talk about what any team needs for success in the playoffs, okay? You need great special teams. You need your best players to be your best players, and you need secondary scoring. Okay, who stepped up with a big goal for the Maple Leafs?
William Nylander.
Okay,
William Nylander.
No, I'm saying outside of the best players, who stepped up for a big goal for the Maple Leafs? Game two, it was Matthews. Okay, game five, it was Nyes. Game six, it was Nylander. I mean, remember last year in the first round against the Tampa Bay Lightning, they got big goals from Kerfoot. They got big goals from Ryan O'Reilly, Nolan Achari, Morgan Riley, like scoring from everywhere. This series, it's almost like everybody said, "Well, our best player's got to lead us. We can't." Like nobody from the third and fourth line chipped in with a goal.
Nothing. And I want to go back to their opponent here, and I'm not trying.
Except
to
for game shots. One, Camp got a goal, yes, in the 3-0 game.
In a game that was over, the Boston Bruins on the back end. 50% of their defense was comprised of Mason Lowry, Parker, yeah, Witherspoon, and Kevin Shattenkirk. Like, sorry, that's not the Detroit Red Wings from 2007.
And the Maple Leafs defense this series, I thought, played outstanding. Like, all the talk coming into the year was they're not going to win with this defense. I thought as a group of six, they played outstanding.
I absolutely agree, and I think the Leafs have a lot of really solid building blocks. It's amazing, now that I think of it, the only defenseman that I thought really struggled was their best defenseman in Morgan Riley. Benoit and McCabe, I thought, were outstanding. Joel Edmondson, give that guy a contract extension today. He should be back with the Toronto
and
Maple Leafs.
And Labushkin.
Labushkin, I thought, was really solid. I mean, Labushkin had as many points as Mitch Marner did. Let me repeat that one more time, people. Ilya Labushkin had as many points as Mitch Marner did in that seven-game series.
He had nine hits in game seven.
Labushkin was really good. And Morgan Riley, I want to go back to this point because we're going to talk about Marner. Oh, Marner, no show. Morgan Riley was also a no-show. I love Morgan Riley. I love everything that he represents. He had a terrible series against the Boston Bruins. He is a big part of the core, the fabric of this hockey team. And he let them down. He didn't do anything close this postseason as to what he did last postseason, where he was arguably their best player. Their best player last year's playoffs. This year, he was one of their worst players. And that... Yeah. Sucks. It sucks,
AK, here's another indictment against the core four players. I would even say core five if you include Morgan Riley. When you go back and look at the record of this Maple Leafs team when those guys don't play in the lineup, it's pretty damn good. They have almost a 700 winning percentage, okay? And it fluctuates with each player. You know, Austin Matthews, the team was 24-12 without him. Without John Tavares, they were 10-2-2. Without Morgan Riley, this is the most indicting one, 31-11 without Morgan Riley in the lineup. William Nylander, 24-10. Like, this team has found ways to win without these guys in the lineup. And Mitch Marner they were a 500 team without Mitch Marner in the lineup. Okay. But again, playing without those guys, yeah, okay, it hurts because they're some of your best players. But I think that the record they do have with those guys has to give a little bit of more compliment to the coach and the job that he does when those guys are not in the lineup.
That is definitely fair. Think about what happened when Riley was suspended for those five games. And, I mean, even last year prior where it was Riley, it was Muzzin, it was other guys who were all injured at the same time, and they were able to win games in spite of it. Keefe is an unbelievable regular season coach. In many respects, he's the coaching equivalent of Mitch Marner, where one of the best, no doubt,
yeah,
one of the best in the NHL. But, again, he just hasn't been able to get over the hump. And I'm not sure either will be given another opportunity here in Toronto. We'll talk to Dave Feshuk in 15 minutes from the Toronto Star. His thoughts on everything that went down. We'll play winners of the weekend on the other side. A long list of winners in the world of sports, including Austin Matthews, who is one of the finalists for the Selke Trophy. Now, I don't think he's going to win it, but that's a damn good accomplishment for him.
So Lady Bing and Selke, he got an award for?
He was nominated for both, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So that's great. That's great. And maybe the Hearts? Maybe?
Nah.
I'm not sure, but it's possible. Also, the roast of Tom Brady is a big winner of the weekend. Maybe we'll play a clip or two from that as well. Wake up Woodbridge in 30 minutes. This is First Up.
Time now for TSN 1050 Time Saver Traffic.
The 401 eastbound express crash at Dufferin is still blocking the right lane as it continues to be a slow go right now as heading in and out of the downtown core. Off the highways, a crash at Eglinton east of Avenue Road and a collision cleanup now affecting westbound side of Dixon approaching Highway 27. Big slowdowns in that area. It's the last week of Pizza Nova's That's Amore Pizza for Kids. 50 cents from every dip purchased goes to kids at Variety Ontario. Add a dip. Make a difference. From the News Talk 1010 Traffic Center, I'm Dan Dealey.
Gameplay. Weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. Gameplay. On TSN Radio. Embrace the odds.
For the win!
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose.
The weekend is over.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Ah, but don't fret.
You're all winners!
This is Winners of the Weekend.
Okay, let's begin Winners of the Weekend with the roast of Tom Brady, which happened on Netflix last night at 8 p.m. It was unbelievable. Like, so much better than I could have possibly imagined. And I want to play how it began with Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe, and Bill Belichick. So let's cue this one up. Here's how the roast began.
It's great seeing you again. This is a big night. The fans want you. Everyone wants you. But it's not your night. Sorry, Drew. Brady.
Yeah, coach.
You're in. Let's go.
Let's go. Are you kidding me? Again?
That's great stuff. And I can guarantee you there's a lot more raunchy material. Jokes about Brady's wife, Alex Guerrero. It's like a lot of things. Plastic surgery.
Lots.
Like it's crazy stuff that went down on that roast. I loved every second of it. Another winner of the weekend, Pete DeBoer, who gets his team past the Vegas Golden Knights. The Dallas Stars beat Vegas in Game 7. DeBoer now 8-0 in Game 7s in his career. That is an incredible stat.
Dude,
incredible stat.
You want a coach? Like, the Maple Leafs should just pay for Pete DeBoer to just come coach them in Game 7s.
Yes.
It's like, hey, man, we don't need you to coach us for the rest of the year. We know you got contract obligations, but if we could just borrow you for one game, we'd love to have you because that's a crazy stat, man.
8-0, man. That's no joke. That's not a coincidence now.
No joke, man.
That's a real stat.
And look at the teams he's played for or he's coached. He's coached the Florida Panthers. He's coached the San Jose Sharks. He's coached the New Jersey Devils. He's coached the Vegas Golden Knights. He's coached the Dallas Stars. Like these are legitimate situations that he's found himself in. He's gotten to two Cup finals, obviously hasn't had a chance to win one yet, but what an incredible accomplishment to him, man.
Has an amazing agent as well, does Pete DeBoer, correct?
He sure does.
Taylor Pendrith wins the Byron Nelson in remarkable fashion. It was Ben Coles who lost the Byron Nelson, who chunks a chip, makes a bogey on 18. Pendrith rolls in a short birdie putt and wins the tournament. His first PGA Tour win. Oh, Canada. Love to see it.
So I want you to go back. You probably have SportsCenter playing all morning. And watch the reaction of his wife, Taylor Pendrith's wife, when Coles misses the putt. The par putt that would have put the two into a playoff and ultimately allowed Pendrith to make that birdie to win. And look at the hat that Pendrith's son is wearing. Okay? It says Hayes on it. On the front. It's just a brown hat that says Hayes on it.
I think his name is Hayes, the kid.
Is his name Hayes?
Yeah, the kid's name is Hayes.
Okay.
That's
right.
Why. I don't think it was an homage to Brian Hayes. No, I don't think. But I know Taylor Pendrith is a huge Leaf fan. He's from Richmond Hill, right where I grew up, in a very similar area. And he apparently was devastated by the Leafs Game 7 loss, then goes out and wins his first PGA Tour event. So at least
turn that frown
somebody,
upside down.
Yes. Somebody in the GTA has some kind of success. And Pendrith's going to be a contender at the RBC Canadian Open at Hamilton at the end of the month. And I imagine he'll be a contender to make the President's Cup team as well in Montreal in September. And there could be some significant Canadian content on that team where you imagine Connors will be there, Mackenzie Hughes will be there, Adam Hadwin should be there, maybe Taylor Pendrith as well. So that's very exciting coming up. What do you got for us?
So Team Canada under 18, they win the gold medal at the under 18 championship. Their finals win against the USA. And man, what a game that was. It was such exciting hockey to watch in the early morning. So shout out to them. Shout out to the Vancouver Canucks. I know the game was on Friday and we really have a chance to digest and react, but them winning in Nashville, three road games they win in that series, and they do it with their third string goaltender. You think that team's there making an excuse why they lost? No, they found a way to win that series. They didn't make excuses who was in or who was out. They found a way to win. Congratulations to Canucks. Sets up a great second round Canadian matchup between Edmonton and Vancouver. Which means one Canadian team will be getting to the conference final, which is exciting to watch if you're a Canadian fan. I'm trying to think of the Kentucky Derby winner's name again.
I forget too. I didn't pick the right one. I can tell you that.
You were on it.
Yeah, well, of course I was betting on it. I mean, between the Kentucky Derby and the NASCAR race yesterday in Kansas, there was the smallest margin of victory in both of those races. I literally nose of the car with Kyle Larson and with the horse of Mystic Dan. Is that what
Mystic
the horse was called?
Dan, yes.
Mystic Dan.
Yes. Yes. Wow. Pretty wild finish though, man. You know, with the end of the race there. So that was pretty awesome. And then you know, look, you don't want to give credit where credit's due, but I am. The Boston Bruins are a massive winner of the weekend because again, they continue to haunt the Toronto Maple Leafs and their fan base. And David Pastrnak scoring the game-winning overtime goal. Of course, it was going to be him, the guy that is Maple Leafs killer throughout his career. Give credit where credit's due. They found a way to win a hockey game, something the Maple Leafs weren't able to do when it mattered the most.
I'm unwilling to give any credit to Boston. Sorry, not happening. they stink. Go Florida. Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star will join us on the other side. Wake up Woodbridge in 20 minutes. Lots of Leaf talk ahead here as it is post-mortem Monday for the Maple Leafs, an annual rite of passage here in the city of Toronto. Hour 3 of First Up continues. You're listening to TSN 1050, and if you were reading the Toronto Star on Sunday morning, you would have seen the column of our next guest. His name is Dave Festruck with the headline that reads as follows. It's beyond clear that this Maple Leafs team isn't built for the playoffs. That is not reactionary. That is simply factual. We've seen it year after year. And on Saturday night, we saw it again. Let's welcome him in. It's our friend Dave Festruck of the Star. Hello, Dave.
Dave?
All right, well, I don't think we have Dave. So maybe, Chrissy, you might want to work that out with Dave. But what a great introduction, too. That's a real shame.
I know. That's twice. Shame. You had two great setups, one with Dreger and one with Festchuk, and you just got crickets.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Well, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But it is a very appropriate headline from the Star, right, in that year after year, it's the same disappointments. It's the same way they go out as well, right? In game sevens, these elimination games, they don't score. Like, if they were losing 5-4 games, I would feel a little bit better. Yeah. At least there's some evidence that they are able to put a puck in the back of the net in a crucial game. But it's the same thing that happens constantly. They lose one of these closely contested games where they can't generate offense in spite of having some of the best offensive performers in the regular season in the National Hockey League. It has to be beyond infuriating for those at the top of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment to watch this year after year. And for now, and I guess at least until now, they have been doing the same thing, right? And that's reinvesting in the core four, bringing back Sheldon Keefe. And you wonder if this could be something different. All right, Dave Festruck is back with us. Dave, good morning.
Testing. Good to hear you guys talking this morning, fellas. I tell you guys, I mean, it does feel like we've been in this place before. It feels like deja vu all over again, does it not? And I think it does say something about where we are in Leafland that I woke up to my favorite morning show and I heard one of my favorite analysts, the smartest ex-player I know, Carlo Colaiacovo, essentially saying he has no other answer than the Leafs are cursed. I think that's it.
Right? I mean, like, seriously. Like, I'm trying to come up with a reaction as to how I feel about watching this team lose the exact same way again. And I guess my reaction is I'm confused. Why does this continue to happen with this group? And I'm going to ask you, Dave, what's your reaction to this group?
Well, look, I'm not going to say I told you so, but I do have documented evidence that, you know, we've been casting aspersions on this group for quite some time. You know, like, I was the one saying the mix isn't right when they blew the lead 3-1 to Montreal in 2021. That was 3 years ago. I was saying, how can it be that everything stays the same when we know this group is missing something? They are missing something, and the guys at the top of the food chain, and Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, and now Brad Treliving, haven't been able to identify what it is. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not that confused about it. Like, I'm very clear on that. These guys, there's an it factor about winning in the playoffs, and they do not have it.
Dave, let's start at the top with Shanahan, who's entering the final year of his contract with the Maple Leafs. How likely, unlikely is it that Brendan Shanahan is maybe privy to a contract extension, or maybe this is it for Shanny running the Shanahan plan here in Toronto?
Well, I'd never put anything past Mr. Shanahan. He's a very smart operator, obviously. He got an 11-year guarantee to run this team, and he's, you know, we all know what he's done in the games that matter. So never count this guy out. I mean, he knows how to move through the corridors of power and come out on the right side of it. So, but I would say this, if he gets a contract extension, I would be dumbfounded right now. I mean, there is no way you can give this guy a contract extension based on what he's done here. There is a wild card, though, and it's Keith Pelly. I mean, it's a tough spot for Keith Pelly because he walks in. He spent the last 9 years plus living in a mansion in England running the European golf tour, and now he's supposed to figure out what the hell's wrong with this dysfunctional team in 10 minutes and make a decision on it. He literally just got in the job a couple weeks ago, so this is not an easy spot for Keith Pelly. So I don't want to profess to know how Keith Pelly is going to handle this, because Keith Pelly just got here.
Dave, what do you expect to happen, and what do you believe will happen?
Well, look, the easiest thing to do here is you know, make scapegoats out of the coach, make scapegoats out of Sheldon Keefe, Guy Boucher, clean that whole bench out. I mean, and rightly so. I mean, you can't go 1-for-21 on the power play after you go 2-for-11 against Florida last year. You know, and we know the litany of brutal power play performances. The one time they got it right was against Tampa. They scored 6 power play goals in 6 games. What do you know? They moved on. But they were 4-for-28 against Tampa the year before that, 3-for-23 against Montreal in 2021. I mean, we all know how a thing that is supposed to be their strength, a thing that could have moved them on in multiple series, has completely failed again and again and again. That's coaching in some ways. I also put it on the players. I'm not like, let's get to the players here, because the players are more culpable than anybody in this, and I don't want to overemphasize. I'm saying the easy play, the no hassle play, is to eat the money that Yo Sheldon Keefe and move on from there.
So let's assume that happens with Keefe, and who knows who his replacement might be. Greg Berube, Todd McClellan, maybe Joel Quenneville could all be mentioned as candidates. But I do want to hone in on the Mitch Marner question, because Nylander and Matthews, they just signed long-term extensions. John Tavares, good luck trading that contract with his full no move. $11 million for one more year. No one's taking that unless you're packaging assets with it. But Marner, I think, would be an alluring possibility for another team. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Again, he makes a lot of money, hasn't shown up in the playoffs, and you'd have to give up a lot to bring him in. But what do you think the appetite would be for the Toronto Maple Leafs to explore a Mitch Marner trade?
I think it's a huge, huge appetite, obviously. I mean, I think they've been bonked in the head enough now, you would hope. but they realize they got it. The mix does have to change. You can't just keep going back with this. I mean, even Shanahan, who's been as stubborn as anybody about this, would have to admit that. Kyle Dubas admitted it in his last press conference that, you know, maybe something substantial has to change in the core. And who knows what he might have done if you know, he wouldn't have attempted the palace coup that went wrong and landed him in Pittsburgh. But, you know, look, Marner's going to steer the process, right? And we know how negotiations between Marner and the Toronto Maple Leafs have gone at the best of times, when they were talking about giving him nothing but money and showering him with all the riches he could imagine. Imagine how negotiations with him are going to go when it's more contentious, when they're basically saying, we don't love you anymore, Mitch. I don't love the potential outcomes of that, and I don't love how it's going to work out for the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's hard to win that trade, fellas, any way you look at it. And if they do, they'll be pulling off a real coup.
Yeah, no, for sure. Look, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered, but I asked this to Dregs. Are you surprised to see Sheldon Keefe speak today if he's a guy that most people expect that is probably going to be replaced?
Hey, it's a Maple Leaf sports and entertainment tradition. You know, Masai made Dwayne Casey do it when he knew full well that he was about to fire Dwayne Casey. That was an uncomfortable moment in history. You know, Masai loves to talk about how Dwayne's a great mentor and get all teary-eyed talking about Casey and how what a great man he was. But he did him dirty on that one. And look, there's no friends in this business. It is a ruthless, ruthless business. Everybody's out for themselves. Everybody's trying to survive here. And yeah, they're going to make Sheldon Keefe do whatever they want Sheldon Keefe to do. Because guess what? They gave him a 2-year extension. No one's going to cry for him if he gets fired. He's going to have 2 years' pay coming to him, and I think he'll get another job because you look at his record. It's awfully good in big moments. To me, guys, the heart of the matter is what Jim Montgomery said after the game. You know, coaches are relatively powerless. You know, like when it comes to how are your guys going to perform. Montgomery said, like, he came to the rink, he wasn't sure if his players were going to grab it. He said, you know, ultimately you can prepare, you can videotape stuff, you can go over all the X's and the O's, but it comes down to the Jimmys and the Joes, and will they grab it? And the Leafs, again and again, the opportunity has flashed before their face, and they just have decided not to grab, you know, and we can go through the litany of stats to tell you exactly that, but one goal in the playoff series from Austin Matthews. I know he got hurt, but he's in six winner-take-all games. Austin Matthews, Mr. 69, has zero goals. Mitch Marner in six winner-take-all games has zero goals. You know, like, how do you win if your best players aren't your best players? I don't know. There's no easy solution. There's no coach in the world that's going to be able to figure that one out.
God, I thought we were so past this conversation. Like, last year was supposed to be the start of the next step, and here we are again, right back where we started with this group. It's just driving me nuts that we're here at this conversation again.
How about Jim Montgomery revealing after the game that he solicited advice from John Cooper and Mike Babcock as to how to coach in a game seven? What do you think Mike Babcock told Montgomery? I'm going to tell you.
These guys are
going to choke.
Start on time.
They did it for me, and they're going to choke for Sheldon Keefe. And once again, for the fifth consecutive elimination game, Dave, the Maple Leafs scored one goal in it. One goal.
Yeah, you know what? It's amazing. It really, like, you look at it. Like, look at these winner take all games. One goal in 2024. They lost 2-1 in 2022. They lost 3-1 in 2021. They lost 3-0 in Game 5 against Columbus. They lost 5-1 in 2019. Okay, you see a pattern there? I mean, yeah. There's a pattern. These guys freeze. They get stage fright. They choke. Whatever you want to call it. And you're right. Like, I wonder who Babcock was cheering for, in game seven. You know, as much as I'm sure he's got an eternal grateful outlook toward all the money that poured into his bank account thanks to the Maple Leafs. I'm sure he'd love to see most of them rot in hell. So,
yeah.
But I mean, you know what, guys? Like, when it comes down to it, you lost to a terrible team. Like, Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle. Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle are their number one and number two centermen. No one's going to remember that in 10 years because no one's going to remember Pavel Zacha and Charlie Coyle. They had a combined 0 goals and 4 assists. They're number one and number two centers. Your team is built down the middle with center as its strength, with center as its centerpiece and its most, you know, viable financial asset or biggest financial investment. And you got beat by, you know, scrap heap guys. I mean, it's unbelievable.
We talked about this earlier, the Maple Leafs' defense in the seven-game series, which I think for the most part was great. I mean, Benoit and McCabe, I thought, were awesome against David Pastrnak. Joel Edmondson, Labushkin, they had really nice series. Morgan Rielly did not, and I want to make sure that I hit home this point enough today because Morgan Riley's part of this core. He's been with the Maple Leafs for, what, 11 years now? I mean, it's been an eternity.
Tenured.
Longest tenured Maple Leaf, makes $7.5 million, is a full no-trade clause, long-term deal. He was amazing last year in the playoffs, but this year, Dave, I thought he was terrible. Like, I thought he was a hindrance to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And if you told me at the beginning of the playoffs that Joel Edmondson and Simone Benoit would be more reliable players than Morgan Rielly, I would have thought that would be an impossibility. But, in fact, it's something that did transpire here. And I'm not going to advocate the Leafs should part ways with Rielly. I don't think that's part of the equation either. But I think Rielly is someone who needs to reflect back based on his performance here in the seven games and be like, I wasn't nearly good enough. Did not even come close to playing up to my capabilities. Your thoughts?
Well, I completely agree with you. But in the grand tradition of Leaf defenseman talk, let's blame his partner. Okay, and what about Ilya Labushkin trying to go Paul Coffey, roaming below the goal line all night? I mean, I didn't really get that. I know Labushkin actually had a decent offensive series.
Yeah, more the same amount of points as Marner.
I know.
That's more than Tavares.
Crazy. Like, and one fewer than Austin Matthews, right? Like, let's not forget that, you know, there wasn't exactly this was not exactly a points night on any night for the Maple Leafs in the playoffs. But yeah, look, I mean, last year, let's point out that Rielly was maybe their best player against Tampa last year. And I think a lot of people that I talked to around Rielly who've been advocating for Rielly and criticizing Rielly over the years pointed out that, yeah, it was Luke Shen. The steady force of Luke Shen, who was often at his side, was a major, major influence. I think the steady force of Luke Shen is underrated in how he sort of settled that team down last year against Tampa, sort of got them having some fun on the road, having team dinners, realizing it's not life and death, pointing out that, hey, there's nowhere I'd rather be. You got to have fun out there. I just don't think there's enough of that in that locker room. They're a tight group. I thought Joe Wall was a great influence because he was the guy saying, I'm having the time of my life. Like, this is the greatest thing. I hadn't heard a Leaf say that since Luke Shen. And it's a shame that Joe Wall suffered another injury because this guy he's been a Band-Aid through his career. And the only thing standing between him and being a guy you can rely on as your number one guy is the fact that you just can't rely on him to come out of the trainer's room not limping at any given moment. So, but yeah, it's Rielly is as culpable as all of them. And this, like, it's not like a small sample size anymore, guys. Maybe in 2021 when I was saying you got to change the mix, it was a slightly too small sample size. Maybe I was being a little reactionary, but I was going with my gut. And I was going with the guts of people that have watched this sport a lot longer than I have that looked at this team and said, don't see it. They'll never do it with this group. And people are still saying it, and it's amazing, but here we are.
You can find Dave's work with the Toronto Star at DFestchuk on Twitter. Thank you for doing this, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Fellas, always a pleasure. And Carlo, get in touch with your mystics, your soothsayers, your psychics, and get this curse removed, would you?
Buddy, I tried to manifest it, but we have AK the mentalist on this show who actually predicted the way the whole series is going to go. So maybe he's the problem.
I did say that when the Leafs were down 3-1, they would come back and lose in overtime in Game 7. That was exactly what I said. And I was right. But again, if you've been following the Toronto Maple Leafs for any period of time, this result should not have surprised you. It was maximum heartbreak, maximum pain infliction on the fan base. That's what they do. And until they make some kind of serious change to this organization, I think that's something they will continue to do. Thank you, Dave.
All right, fellas. Have a great day.
All right.
See you, pal.
Dave Festchuk from the Toronto Star. This hour, first up, was brought to you by LeaseBusters. It is so easy to get out of your car lease at Canada's number one lease takeover marketplace. LeaseBusters. Avoid penalties and early termination. Go to LeaseBusters.com. All right, it's time. 416-870-1050. Wake up, Woodbridge. Extended version. It's next.